I'm Kate Remington with Michael Stern, the just-announced music director-designate of the Stanford Symphony. And congratulations. It's great to have a chance to talk with you.
Yeah, me too. Thank you very much.
When we chatted last spring, you mentioned that one of the things that you were really hoping would work out with the Stanford Symphony is that it would give you a chance to conduct basically an orchestra in your hometown. And so it must be just a really wonderful feeling to have that happen.
Well, that was the primary motivation in a lot of ways. We're on the road all the time, and my children are 10 and 13, and the idea more and more took hold that contributing to the community where my children are growing up was of paramount importance to me. And the Stanford Symphony is an organization with so much possibility, and the players are so devoted and ambitious and dedicated. So it's not, from a musical point of view, it's a pleasure. But in terms of, what it really means in the larger context, it'll mean that I'll do a little less guest conducting and have more time at home, which was the goal anyway. But beyond that, it's also the idea of being able to give back and create something of meaning in a place where they will be around and they'll be able to hear it, and I can be with them at the same time. And that's really meaningful to me.
I can imagine. And it must be nice to know that, you because you're contributing to this community where you live as well, and you'll be able to see the results of everything you do with the symphony have a kind of a ripple effect on the community while you're here. So that's really awesome.
Yeah. Exactly.
You'll be conducting two concerts this weekend, October 19th and 20th, at the Palace Stanford. And how much input did you have on putting the program together?
Not too much, because I was not supposed to be conducting these concerts. The season had been planned, and the orchestra and I had not yet made a decision. And then when we did, towards the end of last spring, the beginning of the summer, we were looking for at least one date in this season to give us the chance to work together, and we found one in February. And that is going to happen. It's going to be an all-Beethoven concert to help celebrate the 250th anniversary of Beethoven's birth, mm-hmm. with Pamela Frank, who's a great friend and a consummate violinist and a great artist, and it's going to be a wonderful program. But that's the way it was. And then completely unconnected with anything, the first concert of the year, this one coming up this weekend, became available. And they were looking for a guest conductor. So it just so happened I was supposed to be in London, and that date got postponed. And it was meant to be, right? So
yeah.
A week popped open in my schedule. A need for a conductor opened up in their schedule. I just made the decision, or we made the decision together, to continue on working together, and the program was basically set. Stephen Huff, who was a miraculous pianist, mm-hmm. and a wonderful musician, was already playing Rachmaninoff. Tchaikovsky was already on the program. I suggested the opening work by Gabriella Lina Frank. It's a really attractive, wonderful, rhythmic, vital piece that she wrote in 2017. It's a little bit folkloristic, and it's heavily influenced by the mystical story of Apu, this kind of spirit, this Peruvian spirit, but it's got so much color and propulsion, and it's just a fun and marvelous way with a really fresh contemporary voice to start this new season.
Yeah, and it's going to be a Stanford Symphony premiere too, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
So you guys will all be on the finding out together what it's going to take to pull it off, and it's
well. That's always an exciting thing when you're discovering new music and you have a chance to jump into a new score. It's new for everybody, and it's a very fun process. There's a lot of curiosity, and there's a lot of working things out and figuring things out together, and I love that. That's one of the great things about doing new work, right? Because it invigorates. I love doing the Fourth Symphony by Tchaikovsky. It's one of the great, you talk about propulsion and mm-hmm. color. It takes the roof off the house. it's gangbusters. But I think you hear and think about old music differently when you're involved with the music of our time. And I think all the experience that you bring with the established repertoire to new music can help you understand new work as well. So it goes both ways, and it's really mutually beneficial.
Yeah, it really is true that everything we bring to, you know, sitting in a concert hall and hearing these pieces, it does inform all of the music that's there. And you mentioned when we talked in the spring that you don't program new music just to have works by living composers on the program. You only program things that you really believe in. And so what is it about this particular piece that, like, really grabbed you when you heard it the first time?
Well, it's very well crafted for the orchestra. It sounds good for the orchestra. I'm not sure I actually heard it, but I got the score. And first of all, I liked the originality of her voice. I liked, and I'll be honest, I liked the idea of starting, you know, the very first quasi-official concert with the Stanford Symphony with a contemporary woman composer who's writing really original music and sort of making a statement. It's a statement how shall I put this? It's not music that panders, and yet it's incredibly fun. It's very accessible. It's got a great bounce to it. It's a wonderful piece to open a program with. I mean, there are a lot of reasons, and I like the idea of bringing something utterly new, something which almost guaranteed nobody in the audience or on stage might have heard, and having them love it, right?
Yeah.
Chances are there are lots of people who might have heard the Rachmaninoff Concerto or the Tchaikovsky Symphony before, but if you do your job right, they'll be hearing it with fresh ears also. And I just think it fits the program perfectly, and it seemed like the perfect thing to do.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting to hear something like brand new. So that is this just really going to be a great experience. And then you mentioned the Rachmaninoff with Stephen Huff. Have you worked with him before?
I have. He's fantastic. He's such a thinking, thoughtful, deep musician, and he's an absolutely marvelous pianist. He's one of these guys who can play anything. Right.
Yeah. So
he doesn't have, I mean, he's a composer himself. He understands music from the inside out. And his repertoire is vast, from the very oldest stuff to the very newest stuff. So to do a piece that's as in the repertoire as the second Rachmaninoff with somebody like that, who, you know, is going to look, I've never done the Rachmaninoff with him, but you just know that there's going to be intentionality behind every decision that he makes about the piece, and that's wonderful.
Yeah, he did a really interesting series of all of the concertos by Rachmaninoff, and what he really wanted to do was to recreate the rubato that was really unique to Rachmaninoff's recorded performances, and so he really spent a lot of time getting inside that and studying them, and so that's, you know, he clearly knows the music very, very well. And so it sounds like it's going to be a great collaboration between the two of you.
And, I mean, it's interesting that you bring up the whole idea of rubato, because what rubato was in the 20s and 30s is very different now. And the risk-taking and the incredible, malleable freedom without breaking the line was a hallmark of Rachmaninoff's playing. So rubato can never be just on the surface, but it also can't be so self-indulgent that you lose the direction of the music. And just the idea of tackling that aspect is another reason to love Stephen Huff.
Yeah, and it's got to be a fine line that, you know, everybody walks, because clearly you want to respect a composer's work. And in the case of Rachmaninoff, too, because he was such an incredible performer, but you want to sound like you've got your own voice, too. So it's got to be a tough balancing act.
Exactly.
And the Tchaikovsky Fourth is just such a monumental work. I mean, his heart is just so much on his sleeve in this work. And one of the things I was wondering about is, as you're conducting it, I mean, it's such an emotional work, but you probably don't have time really to kind of wallow in it because you're sharing it with everybody. So how do you walk that line?
Well, you know, the great Russian conductors of the early 20th century, Mavrinsky, for instance, or Kondrashin, when asked, how do you do Tchaikovsky? And they said, exactly like Beethoven. Hmm. Because for them, it wasn't excess. It wasn't anything to wallow in. The music is what it is, and it's all the more powerful for a certain sense of restraint. That said, it is about as romantic, with a capital R, symphony as you can imagine. So you need to revel in the moment without unraveling, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And so, again, you can't push or pull beyond the limits of the music. And yet, if you're just going to do it without understanding the emotion behind the music, then you may be missing the point. And, you know, this whole symphony is a struggle. I mean, there's a lot of triumph at the very end, but it's not the triumph of the Fifth Symphony. It's a very different feeling, and the melancholy beauty of the second movement speaks for itself. But the storm and stress, the turmoil, probably mirroring some of what Tchaikovsky himself was going through.
Mm-hmm.
He did not have an easy life. He certainly didn't have an easy inner life. He was conflicted, and he was confused, and he was sometimes ashamed, and he was complicated. And all of that is in this piece. But it also is one of the great accomplishments of melody making. You know, just Tchaikovsky knew how to write a tune, and he certainly knew how to orchestrate. So, again, you have this extraordinary use of the color of the orchestra to maximal effect, and it sweeps you off your feet. But there are moments of such intimacy in the second movement, even in the first movement, and yet the takeaway is this unbelievable, almost relentless propulsion, which is completely infectious,
yeah.
and you get swept away. I mean, we get swept away on stage, and certainly the audience. It's not a masterpiece for nothing.
It's going to be such a wonderful experience to have these two monumental Russian pieces side by side, basically.
Yeah, it's true.
So, yeah.
So I love the program, and when they suggested that I just take it over, I thought, yeah, great.
Yeah, why not? And then you mentioned you'll be back in February for the big Beethoven birthday bash. And then
Right. Beyond
that, what are you looking forward to down the road? Because you will have an opportunity at that point to kind of craft your own season. So
that's right. Well, first of all, I want to get to know a little bit more about what the players have played recently, what they're looking to play, hoping to play, and to make programs that really land. I like programs that have like a red line holding them together, you know, some kind of arc of meaning. I think I've always liked programs that make sense together. First of all, the players in this orchestra can play anything. So there are no impediments to the plan, to any planning for the future in terms of repertoire. And I think it's absolutely important not only for every program to be individually enticing, but also to bring a kind of breadth to the offering so that people do not start to think they're hearing the same things all the time. We're lucky, you know, in the orchestral repertoire, we have so many choices. It's a little harder if you're a flugelhorn soloist or something, you know. Harmonica arrangements of Bruckner symphonies are hard to come by.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just...
there is that Villa-Lobos concerto, though.
There is that, yeah.
But it's going to be so exciting to have you here, and we're all really looking forward to the concerts on the 19th and 20th. And so, Michael, thank you so much for taking some time to talk about it.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure.